so mad.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you for coming to this meeting of the Clinton Township Board of Education. Heather, would you please, welcome to this meeting of the Clinton Township Board of Education. I'm going to call this meeting to order. Would you please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
In accordance with the provisions of the New Jersey Open Public Meetings Act, Chapter 231, Laws of 1975, adequate notice of this meeting was provided through the annual public notice on February 1, 2013, faxing to 3 newspapers designated by the board, posting on the district website and bulletin board, and filing with the clerk of Clinton Township. Heather, would you please do the roll call?
Mrs. Grant?
Here.
Ms. Presti?
Here.
Mr. Frieda?
Present.
Mr. Higgins? Mr. Malloy?
Here.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Here.
Mr. McTiernan?
Present.
Mrs. Sullivan?
Here.
And Mr. Sturgis?
Here. Thank you again for coming. Tonight is our third budget workshop. Tonight we're going to review the budget process to date. We're going to review our tentative proposed budget. We'll hear a presentation by Dr. Clark and Mrs. Spitzer on the proposed budget. We'll have 3 opportunities for public comment, and we'll have an opportunity for members of the board to ask questions relating to the budget presentation. I also wanted to bring to your attention that this week, the CTMS Drama Club is putting on a presentation of Willy Wonka. Board members, you have in front of you a very nice and creative invitation that was put together. The presentation, or the performance will be this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Thursday and Friday at 7 p.m., and then Saturday at 4 p.m. here at the middle school. And I wanted to recognize and thank Mr. Tariff and Mr. Roberto for their invitation. If any of you get a chance to go to one of the presentations, please try to do so. I know Dr. Clark's going.
Mm-hmm. You have a Friday night.
Okay. And I wanted to thank them for their effort, and also the students who are participating in the presentation, as well as the parent volunteers. And Mr. Tariff and Mr. Roberto wanted to thank the Board of Education for their support of the music and drama programs. We're also happy to point out that the Willy Wonka performance was produced in its entirety at no cost to the district or the Student Activity Fund. So it's a self-funded activity, and I recognize the staff and the parents and the students for their effort there. Thank you. We moved around some of the public comment sections tonight because we wanted to make sure that there was opportunity for public comment after the budget presentation. So we're going to move some BA action items. First, we're going to have recognition of the public. Then we're going to have, in the report of the school business administrator, we're going to move a few action items. Then we'll have a budget presentation by Dr. Clark and Mrs. Spitzer. Then we'll have another recognition of the public. We'll have opportunities by the board to ask questions about the budget. And then we'll move on to some action items in facilities and finance. So to start off the night, we have public comments on agenda items only. If anybody from the public would like to speak to the Board of Education on agenda items only, please approach the mic. Let us know your name and where you live, and try to keep your comments to 3 minutes if you can. Okay, no comments on agenda items tonight. Moving on to first recognition of the public. This is a second opportunity for somebody from the public to come speak to the board about any item. It doesn't need to be on the agenda. If you have anything on your mind you'd like to speak to the board about, Please approach the mic and let us know who you are and where you live.
Hi, I'm Joanne Jito, a teacher here at the middle school, and I'm chairing negotiations. And Mr. McTernan, I'd like to thank you, Tiernan. I'd like to thank you for last week for acknowledging the beginning of the negotiations. And we also are looking forward to being a painless, pleasant experience. No, in all seriousness, we do look forward to this process and also hope for a timely resolution. Great. So thank you. Great.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. Would anybody else like to speak to the board on any items? Okay, seeing no takers, we're going to move on to the report of the school business administrator. We have three action items, BA027 through BA029. I'm going to seek a motion.
So moved.
By Maria, and a second.
Second.
By Rachel.
Mrs. Krusty?
Yes.
Mr. Freda?
Yes.
Mr. Malloy?
Yep.
Mrs. McLaughlin?
Yes.
Mr. McTiernan?
Yes.
Mrs. Sullivan?
Yes.
Mrs. Grant?
Yes.
And Mr. Sturgis?
Yes.
All yes, motion carries.
Okay, we're going to remain within the report of the school business administrator. Dr. Clark is going to lead a discussion on the school budget process.
Everyone, thank you for coming. It's always good to see a nice, healthy turnout for our budget process. This is the preliminary budget. Okay. All right. I'd like to just review the budget process for 2013. Was a little bit different than we've done in the past. It was basically a needs-based budget. That means you start from the bottom and you work your way up. Some people call this a zero-based budget. We're calling it needs-based. We didn't want to confuse any numbers for anyone. So needs-based. We worked with the administration and we worked on priorities set by the administration and the Board of Education. Board of Education is guided by the priorities in the strategic plan. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about student achievement later, but I would like to point out a couple of things in the strategic plan under student achievement. Clinton Township School District class size will be below state average in all grades and subject areas. Purposeful articulation occurs regularly between subject areas, grades, and schools. All professional learning opportunities will be directly based on data and other documented student needs. We will utilize comprehensive assessments to ensure that students perform at or above our district factor group. Clinton Township School District will identify individual student needs and provide appropriate programs to maximize student learning. Clinton Township School District will consistently implement a rigorous curriculum that is grounded in the New Jersey core content standards and is reflective of the needs of the 21st century learner. I just wanted to review that because I know that we haven't talked about the strategic plan for a while at a public board meeting, and Mrs. McLaughlin reminded us all to bring it up at our presentation, so I just wanted to make sure that everyone was aware of the importance of the strategic plan in terms of student achievement. We also are going to talk a little bit tonight about mandates, that is, state and federal mandates, and the cost that they have as an impact on the school district. We're going to talk about our review of the budget itself and savings and revenue production, enrollment, year-over-year comparisons. We want to make sure we review the state aid summary with all of you because it was in the newspaper, and the newspaper only gave one of the numbers we got from the state, not all of them. So we want to share all of it with you and give you some information about this, how the tax rate is calculated and how it'll impact your household. So I put a compass up there. So first we put the puzzle pieces together. Then we used these items to guide how we were going to manage the budget. And clearly, student achievement is our main priority. That's the main mission of the Clinton Township School District. Another big priority that we've talked about at our workshops is safety and security of our students and our staff. We're concerned about maintaining the community investment in our facilities. The community pays taxes that they've invested for a long time in the Clinton Township schools, and we want to maintain that investment. And we also want to be clear that we understand the fiscal responsibility we have to the taxpayers. So, unfunded mandates and their costs. I found a little graphic that shows that they are increasing. And the reason they're increasing is because the state and the federal government, but predominantly the state of New Jersey, sees fit to increase their mandates. We heard over the past year that there were committees in the State Department of Education that were working on streamlining mandates and trying to cut back on the mandates that they were giving us so they wouldn't cost as much. And they were trying to do that. However, if you see mandates, what happens is, as they were trying to cut back on them with one hand, the other hand was passing more laws that increased mandates. So it didn't exactly work as they thought it was going to work. And so we're going to talk a little bit about these mandates and what that means to each of the school districts in New Jersey, not just Clinton Township. So the first one is PARC, which is the new name for New Jersey Ask. New Jersey Ask is our standardized state testing, and PARC will be the new name for that testing. And it's going to be online. If you were at our presentation a few meetings ago, we talked about the impact of this on our classrooms, our students, our teaching, how we manage data, how our students take tests. They have to be skilled at taking online testing, on writing online, answering lots of questions, managing a computer well. So there are a lot of things that come into this. So one of the things that we do to collect data in terms of the testing is MAP, M-A-P, which is another form of testing, benchmark testing, that we've been utilizing in the district. And it's been interesting because it's had some bumps and ups and downs that our teachers have been dealing with. However, at the end of the day, it gives the students practice, and it's given our district a leg up on knowing the kinds of problems we'll run into in the future with PARC. So we've actually been, our experience where we had these lumps and bumps is actually going to be very helpful for us in planning for the future for our students. So although it seemed like a negative situation, at times, it really helped us in a lot of ways, and it's giving us some productive data to use in helping our students move forward and do better on testing, and remember those student achievement strategic plan goals. That's one of the things that we want to work on. In that number, we've included the cost of MAP, but we've also included things like our technology for the future. So one of the things that we had a presentation on curriculum and technology and how those things fit together, we talked about Google Docs and access for our students to information and research. We also talked about the Chrome OS and how we could utilize that by purchasing some of those, which are very inexpensive laptops that will help our students move forward so we can have more in our classrooms where our students are actually working on them. Mr. Sturgis, if you look behind you on the edge there, there's a laptop case. It has the Chrome in it, and if you want to take that out and just pass it around so the board members can all see it. I know some of you have looked at it in different committee meetings, but I wanted to share it here tonight so you could take a look at it and get a feel for it. So even with all of that, we're talking 126,200. We also have to, a mandated cost is the new teacher and principal evaluation system. We have to purchase the system. We have to train our administrators and our teachers on the system. And now we're going to have to purchase and utilize a principal evaluation system that's also going to require training. So that comes to $30,000, and there are some other parts of that that come into later on when you see some other professional development monies. Medical and nursing requirements. I just want to stop here because many of you may or may not be aware of the increasing amount of allergies in students, medical needs, what our nurses are dealing with every day, and different mandates in state law about training staff members in terms of EpiPen use, having designates throughout the building, making sure everyone is trained appropriately, and diabetes law and management has also come into play that we're increasing, our students are increasing in type 2 diabetes. That's an epidemic in our society now, and we have that in Clinton Township as well, is causing an increase in needs on our nursing staff and demands for them. If you notice, one of the things that we just passed was increasing the amount of substitute pay for nurses because we can't find them. We are having a terrible time finding substitute nurses. And so we increased the pay at our last board meeting a little bit, hoping to get some more, but we need some more additional nursing staff to help us take care of our children. I also wanted to share something that people may not be aware of. We do get some funds for special education law. Special education law is state law and it's federal law. There are two entities involved in that, so it's very complicated. And lots of legal issues there. But we do get some funding for some of that. It doesn't fund it completely and all our needs, but we do get some money there. However, ADA compliance is where 504s come into play. And lots of people hear about 504s. However, what you don't realize is that a 504 has absolutely no funding whatsoever. So it's a law, we have to follow it, we have to provide for Americans with disabilities. However, there is no funding anywhere for those needs. So if a student needs something in particular, a ramp or something built, laptops, whatever it is that the student needs, that comes out of the district budget. There is no funding anywhere for that. I also wanted to share that there have been many state curricular changes. Those curricular changes have had mandated timelines attached to them. So they weren't just, we'd like you to update your curriculum in the next couple of years. They said, we want you to update your curriculum by next year, and you must totally revamp your English language arts, your math. Well, they staged the math in three different stages, right, Bobby? Three different stages, three different grade levels. But everything else was bulked together in large amounts. And so it takes an enormous time to rewrite an entire curriculum, match it to the standards, and some of them were national standards, and then purchase materials for those. And remember, we have a timeline now, so we've got a short timeline. It's a mandate. It's required to do it by that timeline. We have to rewrite the curriculum with staff. We have to do professional development for that staff so they know the changes, because they were not small changes. They were massive changes in the way we were approaching teaching and learning. And we had to buy new texts and materials attached to all that. So this is our expenses just for next year. We've already spent a lot of money in that area. I put in HIB, harassment, intimidation, bullying. It's very hard for us to break out the exact costs of all of that and that law. However, what I did put was opportunity costs. And I wanted to be clear about what I was saying. When a principal, when HIB is reported to a principal, they must stop what they're doing. They must get the school counselor, who's usually the school bullying specialist, anti-bullying specialist. They have to do an investigation. They have timelines, because remember how the state put in timelines for curriculum? They also, when they passed this law, they put in very tight timelines. And so everyone has to stop what they're doing, and they must do an investigation. Now, think about this. We may have one administrator in a building. At the middle school, for instance, we have the principal, all right? And we have the school counselor. They have to stop everything. They have to do the investigation. It may involve, we may get a report that it involved one student who was bullied in some way, shape, or form, or alleged to have been bullied. However, there may be 20 students involved in that particular case. All those students have to be interviewed. It all has to be documented. Parents have to be notified. Letters have to be written. The interview statements have to be taken. It's very extensive. So you could lose an enormous amount of time. An administrator a day can go, boom, like this in the course of the investigation. And so what they had planned to do that day, those opportunity costs, maybe they were going into classrooms to observe teachers. Maybe they were going into the lunchroom to spend time with students. Maybe they were going to spend some time at a parent event and spend a few hours there, and now that they can just run in and have to run out. So there are opportunity costs to our school that are very hard to measure in dollars and cents, but they do create an atmosphere that we want for our students that's positive and welcoming, that you feel good when you enter our schools. And you may not get that every day when you enter our schools, because our administrators are required to manage the HIB cases. And they can't not do it. Year-over-year comparison. I wanted to share with you a little bit. Our board members have details of budget worksheets, but I wanted to show you a couple of things that have changed, decreased or increased. Benefits costs, which was a big discussion point a number of years ago in school budgets, is decreasing now. Our employees, as they well know, are paying more. Their paychecks are lower. And they are paying more in terms of benefits, and that's a change in the school budget. Utilities. We've seen a substantial decrease in our utilities costs. And some of that is based on cost savings, where our business administrator has been reviewing the bills and numbers and challenging some of the billing process. We belong to co-ops that reduce some of our costs there. Staffing and strategic plan. We have been maintaining, we're working hard to maintain class size and meet state unfunded mandates. So you'll see in some of these areas, you'll see some increases. We increased our professional development monies, for example, so that we can meet some of those state mandates and meet our strategic plan, if you remember the topics I reviewed before. Transportation. We've had a significant savings in transportation. We just went out to bid on our transportation costs. We don't know when the last time that was done in this school district, but we went out to bid those services, and we have a substantial savings in that area due to that. And I will tell you, the company that we're looking at has an excellent record and is in some of the top school districts in the area, doing some great service for them. So they were very aggressive in their bidding process, and we're very excited about that. Capital outlay. We are increasing some of our expenses in the area of capital projects, because if you remember the page with the compass, we were talking about safety and security. So we are doing a number of things in our buildings and with staff that we're hoping will have a positive impact on safety and security for our students and staff. Professional development, I spoke about before. A lot of this is due to the unfunded mandated curricular and evaluation changes. I want to share a little bit about enrollment impact. We definitely have an overall trend that's decreasing our students. Each year we've been decreasing by somewhere between 20, 30 students for the last 3 years or so. I don't expect it to change dramatically in the next year or two. However, I'm going to go back to that number when we talk about considering closing a school, because I want to share some other information with you. But it's definitely a trend downward, and it's a trend downward in most school districts in the state. Birth rates are going down. There are a few districts where there are a couple of populations that have increases, but they're not prevalent in the state. Out-of-district placements right now have been increasing. I think we have 13 coming up next year. We had 11 the year before, 9 the year before that. So they've been steadily increasing. And those costs, if you've been looking at our budget, and we approve the cost of out-of-district placement, they are extensive. And part of the reason for the pricing there is that there's no state cap on out-of-district schools and their tuition costs. So the state caps public schools. However, they do not cap private schools. And they do not cap private special education schools. So they can increase their tuition any amount they want, and we have to deal with that. And most of them are increasing it on a regular basis. Out-of-district placements also get a lower reimbursement from the state. So the reimbursement for students within the district, if we keep our special education students within the district, we actually get more funding than if we do an out-of-district placement. All right, we get less money for putting our children out-of-district. So let me flip back now to consider closing a school. This question has been asked of me a lot since I've been here, starting July 1. I wish I had a nickel for every time the question was asked of me. We did discuss it in our school choice presentation earlier this year. If I'm just going to play with some big numbers for you, all right? This is not detailed, but this is some big number thinking, all right? Looking at it from a high level. Let's take, for example, the school that's always brought up to me. I'm sorry, Mary. I apologize up front to our principal of the school. Patrick McGarren is always brought up as the example of the school we should close. I'm not exactly sure why, but that's the school everybody brings up to close. That population is about 275 students. Am I right, Mary? Am I close? Yes? Okay. So 275 students. Now, the other thing that people say to me is, if you didn't have school choice, you could close that school. All right? Well, school choice numbers, we are accepting this coming year 110 school choice students. All right? Those school choice students, I've been very careful in how I accepted them because I made sure that we had room. If you think about the way the sections and the classes are, they're not always even. You know, one year we have a higher birth rate than another year. So we might have more, you know, third graders than second graders, for example. So what I didn't want to do when we accepted school choice students is I wanted the district to make money as opposed to lose money. You lose money if you just accept those whoever applies, and it doesn't matter. You don't look at their grade level. I had to look very carefully. I made the principals do a lot of additional work. They're nodding their heads at me. They weren't happy. But I made them map out all of those sections and all our projections. So I knew that if I accepted more than a certain number in a particular grade level, I would have to add a section to that grade level. If I had to add a section to that grade level, then that meant that I had to hire another teacher, which means that I would lose money on school choice as opposed to increase money for the school district. So it's a delicate balance you walk with school choice, but if you're careful about it and you think it through, you can make money, and we'll show you how that has increased our revenue and been a benefit to Clinton Township students, all right? By the way, one of the questions that's always asked me about this is, do those students increase, the school choice students, increase costs for the district? No, they do not. They are not not prevalent in things like basic skills instruction, literacy support classes, special education classes. So they're not using up those funds and those classroom seats. Those seats are predominantly used by Clinton Township School District students. So if you take that 275 and you subtract the 110 students. Now, remember, the 110 students are actually not all second and third graders that I could subtract from Patrick McGarren School. However, I said we're doing this from a high level. Just look at the round numbers, all right? If you subtract those 110, and then you subtract the 30 or so students that we dropped, all right, this past year, you still can't close that building because I have to move those kids to other buildings. And that assumes that you have classroom space and enough classroom space to fit those students, which means you have to have multiple classrooms in places like Spruce Run and at Round Valley. And right now I don't have that. Does that preclude that decision from happening? No. It puts it off a year or two, but right now it does. The numbers don't work. It just doesn't fit, and I can't make it happen in a productive way for our students without enlarging our class sizes so much that you would be coming to board meetings with pitchforks and torches. Maybe not you, other people. Closing a school is not a viable option for us this year. I have to say that because we're doing needs-based budget, every year I'm going to have to look at this again. It's not something that you say, okay, it doesn't work for this year, I'm closing the book on it. Every year I have to look at these numbers again because things happen. But I will tell you, when I talk to the state about whether or not I can close a school, they say, you must be able to say to us, you want to close that school? You must project 5 years ahead and say that your numbers are decreasing so much for the next 5 years, you are definitely not going to need to open that school again in the next 5 years. You can't, they don't want you to go backwards. They don't want you to close the school and then come back and say, oh wait, we need to build a school, all right? So they are very careful about how you approach that, and so we have to be careful and wise about how we're doing this as well. So right now it's not an option, but we don't know about the future. Although I will say, CNN had a show this weekend that said that obstetricians are turning down patients over the past few weeks because Superstorm Sandy has increased their obstetrics patients by large numbers. So it looks like in a few years, those kindergarten numbers are going to go up. School choice. 110 students across multiple grades. We only accepted grades where there were available seats. That said, we don't have to add sections then, which means we don't have to add staff. Another question that comes up to me. Why is staffing going up when enrollment is going down? And that's, if you know this budget, I'm proposing some increases, and I want you to know where they are and why we're proposing them. And it's a question that the board, in their due diligence, has asked. And if one of the board members hasn't asked it, they'll probably ask it tonight. The first thing, it's not an even loss across grade levels. So it's not like, oh, I lost 20 kids in sixth grade, so I'm going to shut down sixth grade. All right? It's kind of spread. Those numbers that we are losing are spread across the district from pre-K through 8. So when you think about that, it's only a few students in each grade. It's not enough to go down significantly. We are going down in general education classrooms. So, for example, we're going up in sixth grade numbers. We're going down in fourth and fifth grade. So we net out, we gain a teacher, we lose a teacher, let me say, all right, gain a teacher in the budget, lose a teacher staff-wise. However, what happens is we're going up in special education numbers. So what I'm doing is we're repurposing. So maybe that teacher from general education is dual certified in special education. She'll move to a special education position as opposed to a general education classroom. So it equalizes my staff numbers in terms of classrooms right there. Where I'm proposing we go up a bit is in support services. So we're looking at adding two part-time basic skills instructors in math, one at Patrick McGarren and one at Round Valley School. And we're specific to the subject of math because we've added, a year or two ago, we added literacy coaches. And we got really a great bang for our buck. I did look at the data on our literacy coaches and some basic skills instruction in reading and language arts. And I just want to share, I'm going to go through some data from Patrick McGarren, if you don't mind, Mary. So, for example, right, on a fall benchmark, all right, they took, second graders took what's called the Dibbles test. It's a reading assessment. And they scored, these were students who were at risk, all right, and got 44. When they took it in the winter, their benchmark moved up to 68, all right? That's a big jump in a reading assessment score. Third grade, we had a fall benchmark, 77. This is an average score, moved up to 92, all right? These are big jumps for our kids to make, and what they do is tell us that we, a few years ago, when we were hit really bad in our budget, we lost reading instruction, all right? We lost that support for basic skills, reading instruction. We put some of it back. Now we want to add a little bit more back for two reasons. Three. One, because I'm getting some very good data back on what the literacy coaches are doing and how the scores of our students are improving because of that. And remember, the critical area is reading. That will, if we can improve our reading and language arts, we can improve test scores. Not the test scores are the end all and be all, mind you, but they are important for a school district and for student achievement. So that's one reason. Math is an area that is much more specialized in terms of instruction. A couple of years ago, or maybe it was last year, I'm not sure, you'll have to fill me in, board, if I'm wrong about this, but the board made a decision, the board and superintendent made a decision to keep unified arts teachers from traveling from building to building at Patrick McGarren and Spruce Run. And those teachers were assigned or were given assignments and training in terms of a success program for literacy support that added additional support in our primary grades. And so by doing this, all right, they really trained in this, they worked hard, and they're doing well with our students. However, we don't have math support, all right? And one of my concerns is that the Common Core standards have changed dramatically in math, dramatically, much more so than in language arts. And it's creating a bit of havoc in terms of teaching, changing subject areas for grade levels, going into great depth. And we really need to improve our math instruction. Math is a much more specialized instructional area than language arts. I am a language arts teacher, so I say this with great pain. However, all right, we know that math is a very specialized instructional area, and you have to have particular skills in this area to do right by our students, especially with the changes in the Common Core. So math is an area we picked to focus on, and where we believe that we want to focus on it in second and third grade and fourth, fifth, so that we're getting some support in those two buildings to really focus on those areas. The other area I spoke about before, which is nursing, I am very concerned that our nurses have enormous responsibility for the health of our students. And frankly, our staff as well, because they're always making sure our staff is okay. I know because they ask me and check on me all the time when they see me going through the building. So we want to make sure that our nurses are at the top of their game all the time. And right now, they're spending so many additional hours that not only are unpaid, all right, but they give up their lunchtime, all right, any possible, if you think you ever stop to have a cup of coffee at work, nurses don't stop to have a cup of coffee, all right? They've got somebody bleeding, sneezing, fever, whatever. So we really believe that we need to support them. We can't put in this, we have to go back to fiscal responsibility. I can't just throw in all kinds of additional staff, but if I add some part-time people, I think we'll be able to get some part-time nurses who can travel between a couple of buildings each. The part-time people would work less hours than benefits would not be required, and it would give some support. We're also looking at some part-time secretaries, adding to Round Valley, the middle school, and to special services. And I'll talk a little bit more about why special services, but special services because it'll be a cost savings at the end of the day. Our business administrator did a little analysis to show how we could save some additional funds there. I'm going to, later on, you don't have to memorize this. I have a handout for you that reviews the budget highlights. So I broke it into two areas, safety and security, curriculum and program. And if you look there, you'll see little M's and C's, all right? So what I tried to do is show you which areas will really are impacted by mandated, state-mandated unfunded programs. And the C's is also where there is a curricular impact that's causing us to have a need and provide some additional support. And I broke it into district-wide for safety and security. So there are some things in terms of rekeying classroom doors, the security cameras, and the nurses that fall into district-wide. And then there are things for each of the school that I've included in the budget. So no matter what school your student is in, you can see that there are things going on there that we felt were important for safety and security. The other area is curriculum and program, and I tried to be as specific as possible in terms of the different areas that we have in this budget. So, you know, everything from handwriting materials in grade 2 to math in 6 through 8, some leveled reading materials in grade 4, I think that's grade 4 and 5. Instructional hardware, some supporting technologies, when I talked about the Chrome, the leveled science, benchmark testing. I tried to give you a clear picture of everything, and if you notice at the bottom of that list is extracurricular programs. Previously in our budget, we only funded a portion of extracurricular. Right now in the preliminary budget, we have included the extracurricular programs. What I want to be clear about, though, is not the way extracurricular programs were funded before the fall, shall I say. A number of years ago, you had a huge range of extracurriculars. We've narrowed down the number of extracurriculars and clubs. They're a much smaller amount. The amount of money that they're costing is much smaller. And so what we talked about in facilities and finance is keeping it to the same smaller amount that we have at the current time, not going back to the large amount of programs and participation that we had before. We can try to do that in this budget. If we went back to the much larger programs and activities, we really could not be funding that at this time. So now, let's talk some about some of the numbers. And I'm going to bring up our business administrator, Heather Spitzer, who's spent a lot of time on this. And she's going to, the first thing we're going to share with you is a summary of the state aid so you can get a clear picture of what was in the newspaper and what we really got versus what's in the newspaper. And while she's doing that, I'm going to hand this out to you so you can refer to this. It is dated, so if anything should change.
All right.
Thank you, Dr. Clark. The first slide that we have in reference to the state aid for the 13-14 school budget refers to the state aid that we were awarded last week. In the governor's address, as you all probably heard, he did say that all school districts, or most school districts in the state of New Jersey, were going to receive increased funding. What he didn't say is he was also going to increase the debt service assessment that he assessed to all school districts based on a different calculation. So yes, in the newspaper you will see that Clinton Township did receive an additional $174,000, almost $175,000 in state aid. However, Clinton Township also received an additional state assessment on our debt services of $80,000, or a difference year over year of $30,000. So we actually received about $143,000 worth of additional state aid. That money has been used in the existing budget to put all of those programs in place and to fund all of the wonderful things that Dr. Clark spoke about just a few minutes ago. I'd like to just give you a quick overview. I apologize, this is hard to see. It is, I believe, on the handout that you do have in front of you. This is the way that the tax impact and the tax levy is calculated in Clinton Township. What's important to note here is that the tax levy in the district for the year is increasing 0.66% year over year. The way we go about calculating that is when we do a needs-based budget or a zero-based budget, as we've discussed earlier, we start with our programs and our staffing for those programs from the bottom up. We determine what the financial needs of the district will be to fund those programs, and then we determine what revenues we have to offset what we have in the tax levy. In this particular budget, we needed to increase our tax levy $249,000, which is 1.12% increase year over year. The state of New Jersey allows us to budget to a 2% cap. We did not need to do that this year. We were working really hard on as many efficiencies as we could to try to keep this budget not only below cap, but substantially below cap. In addition to funding, In addition to saving below the cap or being able to budget below the cap, what we were also able to do is we did a restructuring of our debt service. And what that's allowed us to do is save money for future years on a project that we put in place, obviously, when we built the new school in 2006. That shows us an additional savings in this current year budget of approximately $87,000. So if you take the $249,000 less the $87,000, we're asking for an increase in this year's budget of $161,000 year over year, which is the 0.66%. Once we establish what our tax levy increase needs to be, then a tax rate is calculated based on the assessments in the town, and a tax rate is established. That's the part where it's really important to the taxpayers of Clinton Township and what it means to them on their tax bill. I will try to give you a quick overview of what that means. Even though our tax levy is increasing 0.66%, the tax rate, which is what you're going to see on your tax bill, is based on the property values in the township. The average assessed property value are decreasing in Clinton Township year over year of approximately 3.23%. Using that as an assumption, in 2012, if your home was valued at $100,000, we're making the assumption that your home will decrease in value of 3.23%. I'm not saying that it has. I'm using the assumption based on the trend of what actually did happen overall with the ratables in the township. What that then means is that in 2013, your house would be worth approximately $96,770. Even though, because of our ratables and our tax rate increased year over year from $1.11 to $1.15, because of the decreasing value of the home based on the ratables, that you will be paying on your home per $100,000 is less than a 1% increase. And the way that works is we assume that, the example is there. For 2012, your property tax dollar amount based on $100,000 at $1.11 is $1,105. In 2013, assuming, again, that the rateable will decrease at the same rate, the value of your home will decrease at the same rate that our rateables are decreasing, $1.15 on a $96,000 house is $1,112 for a difference of 7.33 cents over $100,000. So for an average house, if you will, or for every $100,000 value in your home, you'll be paying another $733 a year for assessed value in your home, which is less than 1%. I want to discuss briefly our cost per pupil costs. This slide talks about where we compare. I'm going to do some comparison in terms of other school districts in Hunterdon County that are within our operating group, which is a K-8 district with more than 750 students. There are two others right now in Hunterdon County that are the same operating group as we are. They are Flemington-Raritan School District and Reddington School District. What we also pulled into these numbers are Branchburg and Warren Township. Even though they are not Hunterdon County school districts, they do operate, they are a same operating type school district as we are, and in addition to them, to that, they are also I districts, so that we could compare apples to apples. I know that there's been some comparisons in the past with Tewksbury because they are a Hunterdon County school. We weren't able to pull those comparisons this year because they are no longer operating in the same group as we are because they have less than 750 students. What this slide tells you is basically where our revenue sources come from. In Clinton Township, approximately 10% of our revenues come from the state of New Jersey. 84% comes from local property taxes. 2% comes from the federal government. 2% comes from tuition. And 2% we budget from fund balance. If you look at comparatively over the other school districts, we are approximately right in the middle of where a lot of our funding comes from. This slide explains how our cost per pupils compare to those districts we just talked about. I want to also bring to your attention that this is from the comparative spending guide, and these numbers are actual for the 11-12 school year. Unfortunately, the state of New Jersey is a little behind in terms of providing us with the information for the most up-to-date per pupil cost in the comparative spending guide, and we're hopeful that possibly we'll have our 12-13 numbers by the end of March, by the time we propose our final budget for the public hearing. But currently, Clinton Township operates within, if you look at this slide, and I believe you have it in front of you, the Clinton Township School District, the 10-11 or the 11-12 budget year, the cost per pupil, very difficult to see, I apologize, is $13,233 per student in the district. The state median is $13,332, so we are below the state median. And that's just for our operating type. Again, our operating type is K-8 district, greater than 750 students, so we're below the mean there. And in addition to that, we're below the mean for all operating districts in the state of New Jersey. The state median for all operating districts is $13,352. If you look on the lower section of this graph, what you'll see is where we rank among the districts that are our same type of operating districts. There are 87 operating districts in the state of New Jersey that are K-8 with greater than 750 students. In 11-12, we ranked 49th. In 10-11, we ranked 53rd. And 9-10, we ranked 51st. So we are making our numbers better compared to the other operating districts as we continue to move forward.
Can I just say something? I just want to note at the bottom of this, it's probably too small if
you read if you're in the back, but when this will be online after tomorrow. The cost per pupil is actually going up, but not, all right, at the same rate as similar districts to us. And you can see that by the change in ranking. Our ranking, all right, is changing. We're going down, which means that other districts that are similar to us, their cost per pupil is going up at a higher rate than ours is.
The perfect example of that is Reddington. If you use Reddington as an example, in 9-10, they ranked 67th. In 10-11, they ranked 60. And in 11-12, they ranked 70. So as they proceed to go up, we're going down at a faster rate. And that's all I have at this time. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Spitzer.
I left all my stuff up here.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Dr. Clark. Thank you, Mrs. Spitzer. I know you put a lot of work into that. We saw some evidence of that in our committee meetings. I appreciate the detail and the time it took to put that together. We're going to have an opportunity now for members of the board to ask Dr. Clark and Mrs. Spitzer questions relating to the budget, to make comments. Then we're going to move on to the second public comment section. So the people from the public will have an opportunity to discuss the budget, ask questions, make comments. I did just want to talk a little bit about some additional detail behind the process that we use for building the budget. As we said earlier, this is our third public budget session. Generally, the process went like this. At the beginning of the budget process, the Board of Education asked the school staff to perform the needs-based analysis. The analysis is led by the superintendent, the school principals and the directors, and they're assisted by the school business administrator. It is a zero-based budgeting process, so we didn't budget starting from last year's budget. We started from zero and built up. The Board of Ed, we provide guidance to the school leadership in prioritizing where we think the needs are. We somewhat steer the process, and we give them feedback throughout the process through our committees. And there are four committees of the board: facilities and finance, policy and curriculum, personnel negotiations, and communications. So we meet regularly, we discuss items relating to the budget, and we funnel our feedback to the facilities and finance committee. We also give feedback at these public sessions. Also at these public sessions, we seek feedback from the public. We want to hear from the public about what your priorities are. It helps us form an opinion and shape our recommendations to the school. We've had feedback from, or opportunities for feedback from the public at three regular Board of Education meetings. Now this is our third public budget session. The end result is this third public presentation and a tentative budget, which we'll vote on later tonight. So at this time, members of the board, if you have questions for...
May I ask a question first of this, or a clarifying question, and I'll actually direct it to the board's attorney. As the tentative budget as proposed is something that we plan on moving and voting later tonight, is it appropriate in the question and answer section if any of the board members are requesting amendments or changes to the tentative budget that they be addressed during the finance and facilities report or now? Seeing as my thought process is a request for change would probably require a motion, and that's, I don't think that's the right time during the Q&A on Dr. Clark's presentation, but I'll ask your input.
Well, I think what you're opening it up to now is any comments. If you want to propose a change later, that could be done that, when it's being put up.
That's the clarification I sought. Thanks.
I think, Kevin, that would be in facilities finance section after we
yes, I agree. I was just making sure that I had it right.
So members of the board, does anyone have any questions for Dr. Clark, Mrs. Spitzer? Start over here, Michelle.
Yes, I was hoping you could explain both for my memory and for the members of the public what the process is going forward from the tentative budget tonight to the final budget in the end of March.
Heather, can you?
The budget being proposed this evening is the tentative budget. Once we have approval, it will be forwarded to the county office. It's due in the county office by Wednesday. Thursday. Once it is approved by the county office, it then is advertised in the paper for public hearing, which will be held on the last Monday in March. Once the public hearing final approvals have been obtained, then the budget is ready to go for next year. So that is the process. Any time in between, if there are any changes or discussions, if there are changes to the tentative budget, then we will go forward with having a meeting to amend it and forward it to the county office, the same process as we are doing this evening.
Thank you.